think I will start by telling you about a recent psychological experiment, which was done in very conventional academic circles. And it was a fairly simple experiment. The subjects were asked to watch a little film. And this film had people in white t-shirts throwing a basketball back and forth. They were simply asked to count the number of times the basketball was thrown back and forth. And when it was over, they reported on it, and the researcher said, by the way, did you see the gorilla? No one had seen the gorilla. And sure enough, in the middle of this film, with the people throwing the basketball back and forth, right in the middle, a man in a gorilla suit comes and pounds on his chest and walks off stage. No one noticed this. So, in short, there are a lot of things you just don't see. And of course, no one is particularly disinclined to believe in the existence of men in gorilla suits. Doesn't particularly threaten your worldview to know that guys occasionally put on gorilla suits for various reasons. But for some reason, no one actually saw this perfectly obvious thing on screen. So it leads us to think, what aren't we seeing, even in day-to-day life? And this becomes even more pressing when you think about the things that we're told not to see. Because if a child says he sees a monster or a spirit or something, an imaginary friend, that kind of thing, almost always the response is to say, you didn't see that, there's no such thing, and so on. People, even regarded as part of their parental duty, kind of educate the child into our conventional notions of reality so that the child doesn't go around talking about fairies and ghosts and other things that nobody else believes in. In a way, this is doing a child a service because you have to acclimate your child to whatever your dominant culture believes. If it goes through life with a very different set of perceptions of reality than everybody else has, you end up getting locked up or medicated or both. But it still leaves the question, what exactly aren't we seeing? And we have to at least accept the possibility that there may be a lot of things, even in this very room, that we're simply unaware of. It might be different in other cultures in which there's a general belief in these things. And of course, in cultures where there is a general belief in these things, people talk a lot more about them and see them. The usual picture of that is that these people are just simply uneducated savages who don't know any better. But it may simply be that we're living in a highly conditioned reality that's structured a lot more by what we expect and what we're told is real than what may actually be out there. And that's certainly worth considering. So that's a preface to some of the things I want to talk about this evening. And the subject of tonight's lecture is in this magazine. How many people have seen this magazine or get it? A few of you, anyway. It doesn't make any difference one way or the other if you have, but this particular exercise is inspired and actually comes from an article written by a man named David Spangler, who's, I've never met him, although I suppose in a way he's a friend of mine. We've certainly exchanged emails very often over the years, and he is a leader in the New Age movement. He was particularly connected with a community called Findhorn, which was quite well known in its day, and some of you may have heard of it. This was on the north coast of Scotland. It's still there, I think. I'm pretty sure it's still there. And this was inspired by certain, shall we say, extra-normal communications with extra-normal entities. And these people decided that this particular part of the world was a good place for doing this kind of work. And this is on the north coast of Scotland. This place was on basically a sandy strip on the north coast of Scotland, the very tip of the whole island of Britain, which is not exactly the Riviera. And the soil is apparently very sandy. Nevertheless, by their interaction with these nature spirits, they were actually able to produce quite a phenomenal garden with vegetables of an extraordinary size. So there is some possibility that working with unknown or normally unknown or unseen entities might make it a little bit more possible to live in the world of nature as we know it. I often think about this. I lived in England for a couple of years, and the relation of the people there with the landscape seems to me to be very different. People are not necessarily much more outdoorsy, but I do get a sense that the people are much more at home in the landscape than we are here. These people have been there for a long, long time. And it's like the story of Cheddar Man. Someplace in Cheddar Gorge, wherever that is in England, somebody dug up the skeleton that was 9,000 years old. And they managed to get some DNA off the skeleton. And they said, well, why don't we see if this man has any descendants like in this area? So they did a little survey of people whose families had lived in the area for a long time, and they got their DNA tested, and there was one local high school teacher who was either descended from or related to Cheddar Man. So these people, whoever was there 9,000 years ago, whatever invasions and whatnot, that particular island experience, the people were there continuously. And we simply can't say that, most of us. If you're from an old family in America, it means your family's probably been here a couple of hundred years, which really isn't really all that much. And most of us have had ancestors who came much more recently. My ancestors came, maybe 110 years ago, which is, in the course of things, not really a very long time. So there's, and I always have the sense of our of being not really quite connected to the landscape in the same way. And I don't know, is this a problem that has to be fixed? Well, it may be or it may not be. But the reason I wanted to do this particular exercise tonight is to see, well, maybe we can, if there's some way of perhaps integrating ourselves a little bit more comfortably into the natural landscape and the setting that we find ourselves in. What is that and what that might be like. Certainly there are a lot of concerns about the environment and what might be able to be done about that. I don't know that this particular exercise is going to do anything noticeable or visible about this kind of thing, but it may have some impact in some kind of way. I don't know how many of you've done various exercises like this, which is essentially a group guided meditation. But I'll throw out a couple of possible suggestions about some kind of attitude to come to it with. One is a certain kind of, shall we say, an attitude of an active investigation. You're going into this other dimension, even if it's only an imaginary reality. And you might want to just have a sense of exploration of what this might actually be about or like. An alert active sense of, you know, in a sense, just kind of wanting to know. Generally speaking, it's certainly interesting to report on your experiences. It's always a little problematic to look for results in this kind of thing. That is to say, you know, what's going to change or what sort of, you know, earth-shaking occurrences are going to take place as a result of this. In a sense, I suppose one wants results of a certain kind. You know, otherwise, would there be any point in doing it at all? But again, kind of a light, unattached attitude toward the whatever results may come out of this would be helpful. A lot of you, I'm sure, are familiar with the Hindu text known as the Bhagavad Gita, in which, you know, the punchline almost of the whole thing is, you know, the thing to do is to act without attachment. And some of that attitude in this kind of enterprise is probably useful to have. So we will have, it'll be, you know, since a short meditation, it's not not really too long or too intricate. Are there any thoughts or questions before you start? What we'll do is take a little time afterward to share reflections and thoughts on it. So there'll be plenty of time for that. All right. Yeah. I do want the lights dimmed. And that's what's going to happen. Is that a lot dimmer for you? I've got a lot of lights on me, which is fine, but it looks like you're... Well, good. They're not going to be reading books or anything like that, so it's about the thing. Why don't we start by becoming aware of four corners of this room. Now, because this room is kind of a funny shape, why don't we take the four corners of this room to be that, 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 and that. So this is a rectangular space. Everyone who's here is in this rectangular space. So it's useful to have a working space that's sort of set apart from ordinary reality. Sometimes, in some esoteric traditions, this is called an upper room, and really doesn't have much to do with what story it's on. But if you remember in the New Testament, the Holy Spirit appears to the apostles when they're in a meeting in an upper room. And that's specified very clearly. It doesn't even say anything about the house. It simply says they're in an upper room. And that may be what that passage is talking about. So begin by sitting comfortably in an erect position. That is to say, so that you're both as comfortable as possible and as alert as possible. You don't need to rigidly stiffen or straighten the spine, but a position that allows you to be comfortable and to stay awake as much as possible would be good. And now allow your eyes to close. You can take one or two or three deep breaths and release them slowly if you like. And as you let the breaths out, just have a sense of relaxation, comfort, and peace. Now allow your attention to go to the sensations of the body. your feet on the floor, your back against the chair, your hands in your lap or wherever they are. And allow yourself to be aware of these sensations as they come up from moment to moment. 1 second, you may feel something in your back, another second, you may feel something in your feet, another second, you may feel something somewhere else. And you can just simply allow that to happen. Where the sensation arises or what it feels like isn't particularly important. As long as you stay with the sensations of the body. Sometimes when you do an exercise like this, you may experience the sensations almost as little currents of energy that flow and arise and go somewhere. And if that occurs, that's fine. If not, it's fine as well. It's possible that as you're doing this exercise, thoughts, feelings may arise. And in fact, these are hard to stop. Now simply bring your attention to these thoughts and feelings without attempting to stop them. But again, watching them in a neutral, impartial way. As if they were a film. Or as if they were happening to somebody else. Thoughts arise, pass across the screen of the mind, and then they go. In its own way, this is a natural rhythm like that of the breath or the heartbeat. You can see that you're able to observe these thoughts and feelings, as it were, from a distance. These things are passing across the screen of the mind, and there is a watcher, a silent witness of all that passes. You will not be able to see this witness because it is always that in you which sees. But bring your attention to it now and be aware in some kind of way of the silent watcher. That is the true I. And as you do, your connection with this watcher deepens and grows stronger. Now, in your mind's eye, let your attention go to the four corners of this room that I just pointed out a few minutes ago. And be aware of them. You may, for example, visualize them in your mind's eye. Or you may have a strange extrasensory sense of somehow feeling them. Or both. Or something quite different. And see if you can imagine a pillar of light in each of these four corners. You may want to turn your sense of active investigation toward these pillars, inquiring, say, how big are they? How bright? What color are they? And so on. And see what you find. And as you keep your awareness on these four pillars of light, have a sense of them as a sacred space in which we can work. A space in which an opening into another world and another reality may be possible. And now, in your mind's eye, begin by imagining yourself in front of an ancient stone circle, one that is rooted deep in the earth, the stones covered with moss and faint carvings. You can feel an energy radiating from it. Just as if you were going to enter someone's home, identify yourself and ask permission to step into the circle. Wait just a moment in silence, allowing yourself to be seen. All permission is granted. Step into the circle. As you stand within it, surrounded by the presence of these ancient stones, again, use your sense of active investigation to experience what they're like. What do they look like? What do they feel like? How big are they? What shape? What kind of emotional feeling do you have in being here? You may feel as if you're in a great cauldron held by Gaia, the world soul. Into this grail have poured over the centuries energies of consciousness and life brought into this world across the threshold of this circle from sources distant and near, from stars, from the sun and moon, and from the deep fires of life within the heart of the earth. Although the cauldron is empty as you stand in it, you can sense the power of holding within this place. You can feel the grail in your own heart and life, your own powers of holding resonating with it. Some have said that the real meaning of the grail is the illumined heart. And the question the Grail Knight must ask is, whom does the Grail serve? And you can ask this question of yourself now. Whom or what does your heart serve? take a moment now just to go deeply into the felt sense, the circle, cauldron around you. Behind you and around you, felt but unseen, you sense the presence of the guardians of this circle and of its powers, guardians of all it contains and all it connects. These are the Shi, the good folk, and they welcome you into this place and their presence. Take a moment to go deeply into the felt sense of their ancient lineage, of protecting and caring for the life and presence of circles like this one. You are now asked, will you share this guardianship with us? Will you take on the mantle we have worn? Will you be part of the lineage that guards the thresholds, opens the cauldrons of loving spirit, and releases new life into the world? Take a moment to feel deeply and fully into what is being asked of you and what you think its implications may be for you personally in your life. How will you stand in this lineage, wear this mantle, and be a living circle, cauldron, grail in your world? This is the question that is being put to you. Find the answer, the grail of your own heart. When you feel ready, you can inwardly say yes or no. By the way, a no will not disconnect you from the guardians or cast you out. It's simply a statement that you feel this is not your path, or that the timing is not right, or that you don't fully understand what a yes might mean or bring. A no is a statement of your sovereignty and is fully honored and blessed by the guardians. If you do say no, then receive the blessing of the unseen guardians and step out of the stone circle. You can always re-enter at another time that may be more appropriate. If you've said no, take a moment to stand in your sovereignty and sit back and relax and rest. If you say yes, then take a moment of silence standing in the circle among the guardians. Of whom you are now one. Be attentive in a calm way to anything that may occur or pass between the guardians and you. You have always been a power of love and holding in the world, and a threshold between the worlds. You have always been a grail, taking on the mantle of guardianship, which the Shi have offered, only adds to what you already are, affirming it, anchoring it, giving it a new flavor and potential. Just what this means is what you will discover in your own unique way. At this point, the stones in the circle begin to shimmer with light. They dissolve and flow joyously and easily into your heart. Take a moment to feel the presence of the circle shining within your being, your life, your heart. You are the circle, the portal, the cauldron, the grail. You have always been these things, but now you will engage with them in a new way that will unfold in the days and months and years ahead. Now imagine standing stones flowing out from your heart to take shape around you. Take a moment to stand in the midst of the circle of your own life. Feel what it means to you. Now, with gratefulness to the guardians, to your own sacredness, to Gaia, and to the sacredness within all things, stand in your sovereignty for a moment. And now let all these images drop. And return again to the sensations of your body, your feet on the floor, your back against the chair. Bring your attention again to the four pillars of light. And allow them gently to dissolve. Returning this room to its former state. And gently and in your own time, allow your eyes to open so that you may begin to go about your everyday business as a circle of light in your world. So, to begin with, do you think the atmosphere of the room has changed since, say, when you first came in? Does it feel any different? What would you say it's like? Any comments or any experiences that people want to talk about?
The room feels softer.
What did you say?
The room feels softer.
Softer.
Happier? Happier.
The level of energy really went up a lot.
We want to repeat what they say. They're not waiting for the microphone.
Yeah, people have just been saying the room has felt softer and happier.
Did anybody else smell anything?
Did you? What did you smell?
It was like a freshness. I don't think it was somebody's. It wasn't perfume or cologne or anything, mm-hmm. but it was when. You, it was during the part where you said yes or no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting. Well, sometimes people say that certain spirits, you know, have a certain fragrance with them, or are accompanied by a fragrance, or that might suggest that. Always hard to say for sure. Any other thoughts or comments?
When you said step into the circle, I actually felt like I was in lush grass, and I saw somebody, like a young girl, sitting there among the stones, and it just popped in so clearly. It was kind of odd for me.
Wow, good. Well, the she or the guardians are identified with what used to be called the fairy folk, but it's a term I haven't used up till now because, as a matter of fact, as this article suggests, it's not a good idea necessarily to envisage them in the way of, you know, kind of little Victorian fairies or that kind of thing. That's only kind of just one picture of them, and or to imagine them in a kind of medieval context, which may not be accurate as well, since if they are living beings, you know, they exist in the present and the future as well. So I deliberately did not suggest what they would look like so that, you know, you would be open to experience whatever form that came to you.
Just because you're talking about form, what I saw was very tall and thin light, and I saw images of taking hands, you know, and touching hands, so. Mm.
Good. I at one point saw like frog feet and just felt moist and wetness. I mean, it looked kind of like frog feet. I'm just, you know, that's the closest I can come to.
You saw frog feet and kind of looked like, kind of felt a kind of wetness. Interesting. Any other thoughts or comments or questions?
I always had a hard time with the depiction of these wee folks, sometimes of being irritable or ill-tempered and whatnot. And I've always assumed that that they're in a way reflecting our disposition, and that would account for all the little people of various cultures being garbed peculiarly the way the locals are garbed, and not that that is their real dress, but they are in some mysterious way mimicking or reflecting the pattern around them. So if we're greedy and looking for that pot of gold, they'll be irritable in term and protective and dissociate from us. And contrary-wise, if we have open dispositions, they'll be more helpful figures rather than obstacles and secretive.
That's a good point. Thank you. Anyone else?
I couldn't get out of the circle was tilted, and I could not get that as a plain image. It was always 45 degrees. It's kind of strange.
Interesting. I suppose I could offer some sort of attempted interpretation. Probably not really necessary. Anyone else?
No. You look like you want to say something.
Well, that takes us to the end of our little journey. And, you know, the exercise and its experience are for you, and you'll do what you will with it, and it will have its own meaning for you, which is precisely the way it's supposed to be. I don't have any real recommendations. Some people who are disposed toward journaling, and, you know, the old magicians always kept or were supposed to keep a kind of magical journal in which they would record all of these experiences and do that. And I've done that myself sometimes, but I've never been very conscientious about it. But if you are inclined toward that kind of thing, you might want to do that. There are some cookies and refreshments there, right? Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, I would, even if you're not really particularly hungry, I would just take a bite of something to eat or a drink of something before you go out as a way of grounding yourself. You know, one sometimes goes into these inner spaces and coming back. I had an essay. It was a group that met years and years ago, and I remember one night we did some fairly intense experience, and one woman decided she was going to leave right afterward. And I said, you know, although we did have food and whatnot, and you know, I said, you know, Gail, are you sure you really want to go? Yeah, I have to go. I have to get up early and go to work. Okay. So the next week she didn't come back. And the week after that, she came back and she said, you know, I've just felt really kind of out of it. You know, I've been kind of, you know, stumbling off curbs and that kind of thing. I'm not certainly not suggesting this will necessarily happen to you, but it isn't always a bad idea to take advantage of it, even if it's just a bite of a cookie or something, just to remind yourself you're back in the physical. So I think we've all said what we need to say, so